From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, January 25th, 2010. Every week, this podcast brings awareness to the news that shapes the geospatial industry sector, the trends of location-based information technology, and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
From Washington, D.C. to Hyderabad, India, we look at the major takeaways with global implications for the geospatial community from two geospatial technology conferences, Esri's FedUC and the Geospatial World Forum. Adina and I are both back from attending conferences. Adina was in Washington, D.C. to attend Esri's Federal Users Conference. I was in Hyderabad, India, covering the Geospatial World Forum. We're going to look at some of the takeaways that we believe have major global implications for the community. And I'm going to start by delivering one of the, I think, the key issue that came up throughout the whole conference. It was an underlying tone through almost everyone's discussions. And this is the data policy in India and the ability to obtain geospatial information, in particular, remotely sensed data. Now, this is an issue that's come up for many, many years. It had been hoped that by now the federal policy for obtaining high-resolution geospatial remotely sensed imagery would be resolved, that independent contractors, systems integrators, even private individuals could obtain satellite data. That is not the case. It still remains a major battle. In fact, in speaking with some of the systems integrators, those in India and those doing business outside of India are just having major, major frustrations with the Indian policy makers there, such that they are concerned about violating national security regulations, that they're being very, very cautious on how they do that. The situation is that they have to obtain permission to use data. They have to have a certificate in hand to use information of a highly sensitive nature, or highly sensitive in federal terms. And this was just underlying the whole theme of the conference. It causes a lot of what I would say is hesitation to do business, and it's hindering the major infrastructure projects in India. Now, having said that, the progress that the country has made in using the technology and the development of the business in India has improved just dramatically. Although the companies who are trying to help the Indian government set policy, in particular those in the satellite data companies, GeoEye and DigitalGlobe, are trying to urge the Indian government to set policy more quickly, to get the policy in place to make it easier to obtain data and therefore get projects online, there is, I think, some resistance or pushback from local leaders. In fact, I was in a session where one person actually said, "Don't tell us what to do. You are on the outside. Let the Indian people discover how to do this on their own." And I could certainly empathize with some of that, because it should be the Indian people. It shouldn't be outside influence. And yet, of course, there are implications that the companies doing business in India have some problems, and they can't be as aggressive in selling products or services that way. So I think I have to – that's the one underlying theme I'd take away, and I'll get to some other topics, but that was a big one. That was a big one coming out of the Hyderabad conference.
That sounds huge, and it just hearing you describe that makes it seem like things are so sweet over here. I mean, granted, if you want high-resolution imagery, you have to pay for it. But for the most part, it's available from satellite, from airplane, just the access that we have to the free data that we call online from Google and Microsoft and so forth. We're just incredibly spoiled.
Indeed. It was really interesting speaking with one individual, I won't name him, a colleague that I met in New Delhi. And what he said was it is very, very frustrating. And this is a large company. This is a company that has dedicated in the order of 1,000 people to do geospatial projects. So you can almost feel the frustration coming through. And yet, obviously, there's been progress, and things will happen. But it may take it may be on their timetable, not ours.
Right. And I think the one comment I have to make here is that we sort of had all of this frustration back after 9/11, And slowly but surely, with some calm and some thinking, we've made, I think, some significant progress in making data available.
Right, right.
So I'm pleased to say that that issue did not come up. So I was concerned in Washington, D.C. this past week.
Right.
But something else came up that I think is really interesting and may have implications globally. And that's that for the first time, I felt like it was possible that despite all the best efforts of organizations like the USGS and FGDC and the Open Geospatial Consortium to try to put together all the pieces that are required for some kind of NSDI for the United States, in fact, it may be that ESRI is the organization that's going to do it. And I know that's a huge leap, and ESRI is only at the beginning of its Community Maps program, but it sure feels like it's got so many of the pieces in place. It's got standards in the form of templates. It's got a crowdsourcing kind of model. It's got data that's sort of seeded in certain layers, such that there is data now, but as communities bring their data to ESRI, that data will only get better. And there seems to be an awful lot of energy within the user community to participate. And maybe the reason that they want to participate, among others, is they feel like the federal government isn't doing it, and this is just going to work.
I guess the big question I have to ask is why, number one. Why did it happen in this way? And two, it's just amazing the speed at which this developed. Because we had only begun talking about the Community Maps program, I think it was back in June. In that time frame, it just seems to have blossomed. Did you get that sense?
Yes, it has sort of. The pieces at ESRI were starting to come together much before that, sort of for the back end side. But yeah, the real rollout, if you will, was at the ESRI user conference. And your why question is a really good one. And there seem to be very many different reasons that organizations want to participate. But sadly, I think one of them is simply that what's being provided by the federal government to achieve something like this has just not worked. And what they have put out there isn't usable by the people who want to provide the data. And I think what's very exciting to the users is if I put my data into the pot, it comes back out in a service that I can use, that I can plug right into, and that makes my life easier. I can see that virtually immediate benefit back to me.
Right. Right.
And that's huge. And it's, I'll be very frank, I have very mixed feelings about this.
Mm-hmm.
But the best comparison I can make is we've given our lives over to Google in so many ways. Why wouldn't ESRI's user base, and maybe even non-ESRI users, consider if the return is high enough and they feel comfortable enough with sharing their data with ESRI?
Right, right. Well, Google, I think, was the white elephant in the room at the Geospatial World Forum. The other issue is if you go anywhere outside the U.S. To a conference, the big topic is always NSDI. And those initiatives are huge and widespread in Europe and India. And we could never seem to get it done. And all of the goodwill developed or the best intentions of the Federal Geographic Data Committee and its oversight body, the NGAC, the National Geospatial Advisory Council, can't seem to push this forward. And talk about being frustrated. What happened? Why can't we get this done? And to have somebody, Esri step into the breach, well, okay, they've done it. It seems frustrating.
To be fair, ESRI never came out and said, well, we're going to just build the NSDI. They didn't say that. In fact, the folks that I talked to were basically saying, well, we thought we'd put this thing together and see what happens. Because they weren't confident that people would come forward with their data. And I think they're sort of a bit overwhelmed with the response as well.
Well, and I'm wondering if maybe this whole project gets eventually turned over to a national model. But, I just have those big questions of why were they able to get it done and why couldn't the agencies involved in the national map problem
especially
program.
In the context of the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Actually, Jack Dangerman outlined that in the opening session about all these other countries are so far ahead and we're still kind of, figuring it out.
Yeah. one other topic I wanted to bring to the issue was the infrastructure build-out in India. All you had to do was see what's being done in the country. New airports at all the major cities, Mumbai, Hyderabad, New Delhi, big infrastructure projects, road projects. This is a country that wants to advance, and I think the takeaway I had was that not only are they developing the infrastructure and using geospatial technology to help them do that, they are putting a great deal of emphasis on geospatial technology as a development effort, education, building centers of excellence within major states, and essentially states taking on the effort. They had an announcement that Gujarat was going to develop a center of excellence for geospatial technology. This is a country on the move, without a doubt. Yes, certainly behind in some ways, but not in its focus on geospatial technology. And the world implications are, this is not unlike, I believe, in efforts being done in China, Brazil, the BRIC countries. I guess what I came away with is, and in particular in context of your comments, there are major changes afoot in real efforts to educate a broader community and at the national level put things in place that help economic development, which is the real end game for all of these build outs. So I guess I'll stop there and let you comment, but it was a real eye-opening experience, continues to be an eye-opening situation.
Yeah, the more I read about all of those geospatial efforts going on in India and China and other growing economies, the more it makes me think of how some of those countries got to jump over some of the other challenges that other countries face. So in particular, what I'm thinking about is telecommunications. Right, so here in the United States, we had to build out all these wireline telephone infrastructures. And in Africa and other places, they went straight to wireless.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it sort of feels like, because of the timing and the growth of some of these other countries, they skipped the part where you didn't use geospatial, and they went right to it for their significant build-outs.
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head there. And let me relay a brief conversation I had with another major systems integrator company. It was a personal story in which he said 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, let's just say 20 years, if an individual wanted to get a landline connection in their house, the waiting time was 10 years. 10 years. And in the time about the early 90s, there was a major switch in the government of India that just said, hey, this socialist economic model isn't working. And they brought in big switches. And literally overnight, as it was told to me, that you could get a landline. And so your analogy is just dead on. They just skipped over a whole bunch of things. And let's just carry that story a little bit further. In terms of the cellular communications in India, about 5 years ago, I think they said there were about 3 million cell phones in the country. Today, 700 million cell phones in the country.
Well, and could we push this further? Is it possible that they've watched us bungle around with an SDI and said, we're not going to bungle around, we're going straight to do it?
Yeah. Well, as I have reported a number of times, the Honorable Minister Kapil Sibal is a visionary guy. Now, he hasn't necessarily pushed the whole thing forward, because there were certainly some grumblings that he hasn't done enough sooner. But the guy has a vision. He's done it when he was head of Earth and Science Technology. He's done it when he was head of the Educational Ministry. He's doing it, and now, and in fact, he's got telecommunications under his bailiwick, or at least had. There was a major shakeup in the government last week as well. But still, the guy has a vision, and I don't see anybody stepping forward in the U.S. with that same kind of vision.
Well, somebody who does have a vision is Craig Fugate, and he's the administrator of FEMA. And I have to say, I hadn't even heard his name before I started getting press releases saying he was going to give the keynote at the Federal User Conference. And I have to say, he just took the stage by storm, and everybody got very quiet, and everybody put away their phones, and everybody listened to what this man had to say. And the biggest thing that he had to say was, and I'm going to quote, this was quoted widely on Twitter, he said, "The public isn't a liability during disaster, they're a resource." And what he was arguing for, and what he seems to be quite an advocate for is taking advantage of social media, crowdsourcing.
Right.
Let's get the data from the people on the ground. Let's acknowledge the fact that there's going to be some blips and outliers, just like there is in any data. It's our job to use the data as it comes in, not tell people that they have to do it in some certain way. We've got to figure out how to use what they're giving us, how to figure out what it means, get rid of the data that's not good, and use that as part of our response. Needless to say, people were cheering and clapping and tweeting and saying, this is exactly the right vision, you've got it. And the only downside to this whole presentation was that the people who probably needed to hear this the most weren't in the room. But I really appreciate that a senior person within the administration is standing up and saying, this matters, we have to figure out how to use it.
Well, fantastic. Yeah. Well, finally, somebody in the government with a broad vision of the scope that really where crowdsourcing can play a unique part.
Right, and a very positive, not fearful. So many discussions I've heard from local, state, and federal folks about crowdsourcing has just been like fearful. Like, I'm afraid of it. This fellow didn't seem afraid. In fact, he really was. It's like he was excited about the challenge of how do we use this, and that was just phenomenal.
Well, and the model is what happened in Haiti, I guess, and
absolutely, you know, yes, and yeah. and clearly FEMA gets it.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. If you'd like to comment about today's podcast, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment in the comments box where this podcast is posted on Directions Magazine. I'd like to remind you about some upcoming webinar events that we've got. We've got two webinars upcoming, January 27th. Where police departments reduce crime with spatial analytics, that's sponsored by IBM. On February the 3rd, our webinar is on mobile GIS and how it maximizes field operation and improves collaboration. That one is sponsored by Esri. And don't forget our webcast Directions On Point. Our next one is with Jeff Jonas, a distinguished engineer at IBM. That's February 1st. You can register for any of these webinars at directionsmag.com/webinars. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.